That being item number one on the docket today, 351366, Enbridge Energy LP versus the state of Michigan.
May it please the court, Robert Reichel, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the defendants' appellants. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 7 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
That's fine. Thank you.
Simply put, the issue in this case is adherence to constitutional requirements. It is not, as Enbridge suggests, a dispute involving public policy issues involving the Attorney General's personal views. As you know, Article 4, Section 24 of the Michigan's Constitution provides in relevant part that no law shall embrace more than one object which shall be expressed in its title. The statute at issue here, Act 359 of 2018, violates that constitutional provision in two respects. First, the title doesn't provide fair notice of the contents, certain contents of the body, and in Act significantly, the title actually conflicts with certain aspects of the body. Secondly, Act 359 embraces multiple objects, that is, the construction and operation of a utility tunnel to transport oil, which is physically separate from the existing Mackinac Bridge. I'd like to focus my argument this morning principally on the first of those two issues, and more specifically, the existence of conflicts between the title and the body. The title, as it relates to, as it was amended in Act 359, has the object of providing for the Mackinac Bridge Authority to acquire a utility tunnel, which would then be operated by either the Bridge Authority or a newly created Straits Corridor Authority. That is what the title plainly says. But the Act itself, the body of the Act, contradicts that in at least two key respects. First, under Section 14D1, which provides for the transfer of the Bridge Authority's responsibilities for a tunnel to the newly established Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority as soon as it's created, basically provides that it contradicts the title in that, under that provision, the Bridge Authority has nothing to do with acquiring the tunnel, and the Bridge Authority has nothing to do with operating the tunnel. Instead, it provides that the Corridor Authority, not the Bridge Authority, will both acquire and operate the tunnel. The second, under Section 14D4, which is really the key provision of the body, which provides that almost immediately upon enactment of the statute, this Corridor Authority would enter into an agreement with a private party, Enbridge in this instance, under which that private entity, Enbridge, not the authority, constructs and operates the tunnel. So again, there is a clear disconnect between what the title says and signals and what the body of the statute provides. Simply put, the title says one thing, the body says something different. And we submit that under the relevant case law, that is a clear violation of the principle and indeed the requirement of Article 4, Section 24. As we've indicated in our brief, there are other provisions of the body of Act 359 that also violate the Title Object Clause. Those include sections 14A1 and 14A4, which are discussed at pages 28 to 30 in our opening brief, and which involve provisions in the title, which those provisions don't track the title, in that the title provides for, very specifically, for the Bridge Authority to have certain responsibilities and functions with respect to the bridge, but not the utility tunnel. Whereas the body of Act 359 in those provisions and those authorities transferred to the Corridor Authority do not similarly provide for either authority to exercise those functions with respect to the tunnel. In addition, as we argue in our brief, Section 14D5 also violates the requirements of Article 4, Section 24. That provision, which requires under certain conditions that the Attorney General provide counsel at its expense to the Straits Corridor Authority in the event of certain types of litigation, is not in any way foreshadowed in the title or fairly noticed by the title. It certainly isn't mentioned, but again, our argument is not that every provision of the body needs to be indexed or elaborated in the title. That is not our argument. But if something is not mentioned in the title, consistent with the case law, the provisions in question must be auxiliary,
germane.
Must be related to the title.
Yes, or germane incidental to the title.
That's correct. Thank you, Judge. And we submit that that provision doesn't meet that standard either, because there's no necessary connection between the provisions in the Act, in the title, indicating for the acquisition of a tunnel by the Bridge Authority and its operation by the Bridge Authority or the Corridor Authority and the provision of counsel by the Department of Attorney General. I'd also like to address one of the cases that is emphasized by both, was emphasized by both the Court of Claims and certainly by Enbridge in its briefing. That is the Midland Township versus State Boundary Commission case. Again, I'm confident you've read the briefs, but let me briefly touch on why we submit that that case and the statements in that case that it doesn't matter what agency implements a function for purposes of the title object clause does not apply here. Midland Township involved an amendment to the Home Rule Cities Act. That statute had a very broadly worded title, which, as the court explained, had been interpreted to encompass any activity related to the operation of a city, including boundaries. So the court held in that case that it was inconsequential that under the amendments, the State Boundary Commission would have a role in changing or altering boundaries of a local unit of government. But it's important to note that Midland Township itself distinguished that situation from other cases which are much more similar to ours, including Mackey versus City of East Tawas, as well as People versus Stanton, 400 Michigan 192-195. As the court in Midland Township observed, in each of those instances, the title of the statute was specific and restrictive, and the provisions in the body were not consistent with and went beyond the scope of what was noticed in the title. So, for example, in Mackey, as we've discussed in our brief, the title of the statute at issue referred to changes in the law regarding governmental immunity for negligent conduct. But the body of the act exceeded that scope, that restrictive scope, by including provisions dealing more broadly with governmental immunity, immunity from tort liability more generally. And similarly, in People versus Stanton, the title referred to provisions intended to prevent the introduction of weapons and certain contraband in state prisons, whereas the body of that act provided for and criminalized possession of those items by inmates, which was not noticed in the title. So again, Midland Township versus State Boundary Commission, we submit, is neither controlling nor persuasive here. I'd also like to note that the Court of Claims mistakenly relied in part, following on Enbridge's argument, for the proposition that it really doesn't matter what the title says, so long as, for title object purposes, so long as a factual matter, the public and members of the legislature had actual notice of what the content of the body of the act was. So, for example, it's been argued that and was observed, well, everyone knew because of media accounts and postings on legislative websites that what was in the substance or the body of the proposed legislation. We submit that even as an additional basis for its holding, that was clear error, legal error by the Court of Claims. To begin, as we noted, the Constitution plainly and explicitly mandates that the object shall be expressed in its title. It couldn't be clearer. Secondly, the case that both Enbridge and the Court of Claims looked to as support for that proposition, the only case, which was the Advisory Opinion Re 1972 Public Act 294, which involved a significant change that to the insurance code, the so-called no-fault statute. In that case, it is true, as the court in Enbridge quote, the court observed that, yes, there was broad public awareness of the controversial policy issue involved in that statute. But as we've explained in our brief, if you carefully examine the actual language of that advisory opinion, the court did not base its holding, of course, it was an advisory opinion, which itself is not binding on this or other courts, on the nature of the act itself, the fact that in that case, one was dealing with a codification, a very broad codification, which could be understood to encompass the kinds of specific provisions that were at issue in that case. So, and finally, if one were to adopt as a holding the notion that the title doesn't really matter so long as people and legislators have actual notice of the contents of the bill, that would be essentially writing Article 4, Section 24 out of the Constitution. One may debate the wisdom of that constitutional provision in under current conditions and changes in technology and the availability of information. But the fact remains that unless and until the people of the state amend the Constitution to either modify or repeal that provision, all of us, the legislature, the courts, are bound by the requirements of that provision. Again, in response to Judge Cameron's observation, I submit that the key reasons that the court should rule in favor of the defendants' appellants are the fact that not only does the title fail to provide fair notice of certain key provisions, the ones we've identified in our brief, but actually it's worse than that. The title says one thing in certain key areas, and the body says another. That cannot be reconciled with the constitutional requirement that the title provide fair notice of the contents of the legislation itself. As I noted at the outset, we also argue that the provisions of this statute, Act 359, violate the second prong of the title object clause. That is, it embraces more than one object, which again is clearly constitutionally prohibited. Simply put, the legislature took an existing statute, 1952 Public Act 214, which provided in considerable detail for the role of the bridge authority with respect to a vehicular bridge at the Straits of Mackinac, and grafted onto it an entirely distinct and unnecessarily related provision under which the bridge authority would acquire a separate thing, a utility tunnel, which has no connection to the bridge, and that utility tunnel would be operated by either the Bridge Authority or the newly established Corridor Authority. Those two things, there is no necessary connection between those two things. Hence, they violate the constitutional prohibition on the having a single statute embrace more than one object. As we explained, for that reason, that provision, Act 359, which introduced a distinct object, a separate object, we submit violates the title object clause and should be invalidated and severed from the remainder of the statute. With respect to the provisions that we've identified in our brief that we submit run afoul of the title body issue, that is, that the body is not consistent with what is either expressed or fairly noticed by the title. As we've explained in our brief, several of those provisions, most notably 14D4, which, as I indicated previously, is really the core of the statute, the body of the statute, which provided for this essentially mandated the entry into of what has now been known as the tunnel agreement within a particular time frame. That, because it violates the title object clause, and because it is so central to the legislature's apparent purpose in enacting Act 359, we submit that it could not be severed from the remainder of the statute, because the statute, looking at the Act as a whole and what one can discern about the legislature's intent in adopting Act 359, it's quite clear that the legislature would not have adopted the remaining provisions of the statute without that. Again, we detail that more in our brief, but so those provisions that violate the title object clause because they exceed the scope of what is noticed in the title cannot be severed from the remainder of the Act. Hence, we submit that Act 359 in its entirety is unconstitutional and should be so determined by this court, and that as a consequence, because the Act was unconstitutional at its inception, the actions taken based upon it, including the actions of the Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority, which was created by this statute, and the related agreements that were entered by the Corridor Authority and Enbridge in December 2018, are also void and should be so determined. So in summary, we ask this court to determine that Act 359 in its entirety violates the title object clause for the reasons we've explained in our briefs, and is not severable, and therefore that the Act is unconstitutional, invalid, and the actions taken by the Straits Corridor Authority based upon it are likewise invalid. I'd be happy to respond to any questions members of the panel may have.
Judge Letica, Judge Boonstra?
None.
No, no questions. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right, Mr. Bursch.
Good morning, Your Honors. John Bursch on behalf of the Enbridge entities. May it please the court. In Roe versus Hayman, this court reaffirmed that the title object clause's purpose is threefold: to ensure that the legislature has proper notice of everything that happens to be in the law, to ensure that the public has notice of what's in a law, and to prevent deceit and subterfuge. The clause is not a restraint, it's a notice provision. And here, no one can claim that the legislature or the public lack notice of PA 359 or its contents. It was one of the most public and heavily debated bills of the legislative session, and it was actively opposed both before and after its passage by then Attorney General candidate Dana Nessel. So Judge Kelly properly rejected all the challenges to it, and this court should affirm. I'm going to dig right into Mr. Reichel's main point that somehow Section 14D1, the transfer of authority provision, conflicts with the title. And that's wrong principally for two reasons. First, the Michigan Supreme Court has said that whether a provision is germane depends on its relationship to the act's object, not who is charged with implementation. And this is the lesson of the Midland Township case, although I'm going to mention several other cases as well. And I want to direct your attention to page 654 of that opinion. The court says specifically, an act centering on the function of city government and its title so indicates, it's not consequential for purposes of the title object clause, whether it's a city, a county, or a state official, or even a state agency that's charged with participation in implementing the provision, so long as the provision to be implemented is germane to the functioning of the government. In other words, it's a what question, not a who question. So in Midland Township, because the title adequately explained what the act was doing, it didn't matter that the title did not say, or in that case, may have even been confusing as to who was being doing the implementing. And Midland Township was not a one-off. The Commuter Tax Association that we discussed at page 31 of our brief, that involved the City Income Tax Act, which specifically gave the State Administrative Board the authority to implement the provisions of the act, even though that board wasn't mentioned anywhere in the title. The court concluded that because they got the what right, it didn't matter about the who. Two additional cases that weren't in the briefing, and I'll mention these because Mr. Reichel also went outside the briefing with his cite to Scanton. There's Knauf, K-N-A-U-F-F, versus Osceola County Drain Commissioner, 240 Mish App 485, 618 Northwest 2nd, 1-2000. That one involved municipalities, and the title said that municipalities could acquire, own, extend, improve, and operate sewage disposal systems. But it didn't say anything about them being able to create new systems, simply acquiring and operating them. Again, the court said no title object violation because the body allowed municipalities to establish new sanitary systems by adopting requisite articles of incorporation. You know, so again, it was the what, the regulation of the sanitary sewer systems, not the who, the fact that two municipalities could come together and create a new system. Again, in Pontiac Board of Education versus City of Pontiac, this is 100 Mish App 52, 299 Northwest 2nd, 37, 1980. And this involved a statute designating which local government agency was to supervise and pay for the crossing guards. And even though the title didn't say anything about what entity would have that responsibility, it was upheld as against a title object challenge. Again, the court held that it was the what, not the who. Now here, we clearly have the what, the creation of a corridor authority to operate this utility tunnel that would go under the Straits of Mackinac. The fact that the who wasn't necessarily expressly addressed in the title, although I'm going to push back on that in just a moment, isn't relevant. So Mr. Reichel's best two cases are Mackey and Stanton, but those were both what cases, not who cases. In Mackey, the problem was that the title said that there was government immunity from negligence, but then once he went to the body, it turned out that it was government immunity from all torts. And so that was a problem because the what was not fairly described in the title. It was not a who problem. And even in Stanton, the new case that he mentions, the title referencing no weapons or contraband in state prisons, the body criminalizing provision or possession of those objects by inmates was a what problem. It was not a who problem. They cannot point to a single case that supports the proposition that Midland Township somehow is inapplicable here. Now I want to push back on this idea that even the who was not properly expressed in the statute, because what Mr. Reichel glosses over is that in section 14A of the body of the act, it specifically says that the bridge authority can acquire the bridge. That is consistent. There is no conflict. You can't say that there is a disconnect. Other provisions of the act then go on to say, well, how can this be implemented? And it says that once the corridor authority is in place, then those powers will transfer to the corridor authority. And there's no confusion about that because the title of the act specifically references the creation of the Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority and its operation of a utility tunnel, operation obviously including the acquisition and the building and then the running of that tunnel. And so the state's position is that what the act should have said is that the bridge authority may acquire a tunnel until such time as the corridor authority is properly created and a board properly seated, at which time the power of the bridge authority will be transferred to the board authority. Now that's the kind of meticulous nonsense that this court and the Michigan Supreme Court have consistently said the title object does not require. Again, so long as you've got a broadly stated purpose and the body is germane to that purpose, which is clearly the case here, so long as you get the what right, not the who, then the act is valid. And that's really a simple proposition. It's the same one that Judge Kelly reached. Moving then very briefly to some of the other provisions that he mentioned. Section 14D4 is the one that requires the authority to enter into agreements with private entities. And Mr. Reichel's proposition is that that makes this a violation because the title didn't say that there would be any agreements. Well, of course, entering into agreements is incidental to operating, owning, creating a utility tunnel that goes under the Straits of Mackinac. No one would have reasonably thought that it was a state agency itself was going to do that was going to do all the work. In fact, if Mr. Reichel was right, then the original act authorizing the Mackinac Bridge was itself a violation of the Title Object Clause because the bridge was not built by the Bridge Authority or any other state agency. It was built by Merritt Chapman and Scott Corporation and the American Bridge Division of the United States Steel Corporation. There was an agreement to contract with private entities. And no one in hindsight looks back and says, oh, well, that was a title object violation because the Bridge Authority, the Bridge Act, the original act itself, didn't say that there would be outside contractors who were going to come in and actually build the bridge. It didn't say anything about the Bridge Authority entering into agreements to do that. But we all understand that that's the way that these types of projects work. Not only that, but the original act did not even contemplate that the Bridge Authority would operate the bridge forever, as in today. It was originally scheduled for dissolution in 1986 after all the bonds were paid off, and then MDOT was supposed to take over operation of the bridge. Again, none of that was set forth in the title, and no one assumed that was a problem because the title of the act, the acquisition and operation of a bridge, was fairly covered in the body, and it didn't matter that the who was going to change in 1986 or whenever those bonds happened to be paid off. The very similar points about sections 14A1 and 14A4. This, of course, has to do with the details of constructing the utility tunnel. It's certainly germane and incidental, Judge Cameron, to use your words, to the idea of acquiring and operating a utility corridor. Without location, consents, and agreements and things like that, you couldn't possibly have a utility corridor. And in Livonia, which was cited at page 13 of Judge Kelly's opinion, he says specifically that can't be, that there was no need for that to be in the title. And keep in mind, as you're thinking about all these provisions, 14B1, 14B4, 14A1, and 14A4, that unlike the bridge, none of these were done in a vacuum. With respect to the bridge, all that we had in the Mackinac Straits was water. And so they were doing everything from scratch. But this legislation was done with the context, the background of the Line 5 dual pipelines already being in the Straits of Mackinac. And so when we're talking about a utility corridor, everybody understands that that utility corridor was to take the Line 5 pipelines and move them out of the water and put them 100 feet underneath the lake bed bottom in the bedrock in order to protect the public interest in the Great Lakes. And so to suggest that somehow none of this was properly anticipated by the very broad language in the title is just nonsense. Finally, we have this section 14D5, where the Attorney General is supposed to provide for the cost of legal representation chosen by the state, the bridge authority, or the corridor authorities choosing if those entities are not represented by the AG's office itself. Again, these are excellent examples of ancillary provisions that are not necessary to recite in the title, unless you're going to impose an index requirement in the title that the Michigan Supreme Court has already rejected. At the time that this legislation was being passed, I think everybody was assuming that there was going to be litigation over the tunnel. I don't think anyone envisioned that it would be the governor and the attorney general of Michigan themselves who would be attacking Michigan law and a legislative judgment that had been ensconced in law. But certainly litigation was anticipated. And this provision only kicks in if the attorney general doesn't do her job and declines to defend the agencies that are being sued pursuant to the statute. And in any event, this is the kind of provision that would be easily severable from the rest of the act, even if you assumed that there was a problem there. Last substantive point briefly on the multiple object challenge. Now, again, the question is whether there's any connection between something. It's not like this was a case where the legislature had a statute that, say, criminalized possession of contraband and firearms in prison, and then they decided to amend it to create a utility corridor that went under the Straits of Mackinac. Those two would not be related in any way, shape, or form. But what we're talking about here is infrastructure connecting the upper and lower peninsulas. And to say that the legislature didn't have the ability to amend an existing statute to add on to that infrastructure, again, it would just throw Michigan law completely out of whack in this area. And to that point, I would simply note that in the Michigan legislative brief, they note about a half a dozen other statutes, and I think they're only getting warmed up when they make that list, that would all fall under the title object if the state defendants were correct in this case, that this kind of act with such a detailed title and such closely related body provisions somehow runs afoul of the act. Now, in sum, Mr. Reichel paints this case something like the Affordable Care Act that Congress enacted. And you'll recall that the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, very famously stated that we have to pass the law in order to know what's in it. That is a title object problem. When you're finding all kinds of nuggets buried in a statute after it's been enacted that the legislature or Congress and the public themselves could not have reasonably anticipated would be in there. When you've got a statute which specifically references the acquisition of a utility tunnel, the creation of a Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority, the operation of that utility tunnel by the Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority or the Bridge Authority, provisions that are all reasonably related to doing that, all which are clearly germane and necessary, it's obvious that there has been no title object problem. What's more, there is a presumption in this case, as there is in all cases that this court is deciding, and that is a presumption of constitutionality. And so even if you think that this might be a close case, I don't think that it is, but if you were to conclude that it is, that means that all ties go to the legislature on this, that we should not be striking down bipartisan legislation that was enacted by supermajorities in both chambers of the legislature, which were widely publicized, not only in the press, but in the legislative process itself, which I think is properly within your consideration. Instead, you should simply reach the common sense conclusion that the public and the legislature had fair notice of what was in this legislation and affirm Judge Kelly's very well-reasoned opinion. At this point, I'd be happy to take any questions that you have.
No questions.
All right. Thank you very much.
No questions. All right. Mr. Reichel, any rebuttal?
Yes, thank you, Judge. Very briefly, Mr. Bursch posits the distinction between the what and the who. If you look at the title of Act 359, it's quite detailed and specific as to both what and who. Our argument is not that the legislature had to provide in the title an index to everything in the body. That is not the case. What we are arguing is that whereas here, the legislature has adopted a very specific title as to both what and who, that is a utility tunnel, and who is to acquire and operate it. As we've explained in our brief, the body of the act does not align with what the title says, because the title says that it is the Bridge Authority, not the Bridge Authority or the Corridor Authority, that will acquire the tunnel, number one. And number two, the title says that the tunnel will be operated by one or other of those two entities. But the body of the act, the what, again, the title says what's going to happen, operation, and who's going to do it, one or the other of the authorities. The body of the act in section 14D4 and the kind of agreement that it prescribes makes it clear that neither, that the what is not going to be done by either of those entities. And so there is a clear disconnect, indeed conflict, between what the title says and gives notice of on the one hand and what the body actually provides. And while it may be true as a factual matter that there was a great deal of public discussion, indeed controversy, but that's neither here nor there, about the content of this piece of legislation in 2018. Again, that is not determinative or even persuasive here. Yes, the purpose of the constitutional provision is indeed to provide notice of the contents of the legislation, either specifically or if something is germane, auxiliary, or incidental to the purpose. But the key constitutional requirement is that the object be expressed in the title itself, not on a website, not in a newspaper, not even in a committee report. Again, one may debate whether that may be subject to change, whether that's a wise provision to keep in the Constitution in its present form, given changes in technology and information. But that is not a judgment for the Court of Claims or this court or any court to make. The fact remains that Article 4, Section 24 is in the Constitution, does bind the legislature, and cannot simply be argued away by arguing, relying on extrinsic evidence. With respect to the suggestion that finding Act 359 unconstitutional would call into question many statutes, we respectfully submit that the statute at issue here, Act 359, with its highly detailed and indeed fairly prescriptive title, unusually so, is not common, particularly in the present era, and that the situation, the application of the principle embedded in the Constitution, that there must be fair notice of the body, the provisions of the body in the title. Upholding that here, where there is an actual conflict between the specific and restrictive provisions of the title and the actual language in the body, would not call into question many other statutes, as has been suggested. And in any event, the issue before this court is this title, this body, and we submit that for the reasons stated in our brief, that this statute fails to meet constitutional muster. The appropriate course, we respectfully submit, is for this court to reverse the decision of the Court of Claims, and as I said, determine that Act 359 violates the Title Object Clause, and also determine that as a consequence, the actions taken based upon it, by the Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority, which was created by this statute, and the agreements entered into on that basis are invalid. That is the relief that we ask this court to grant. Again, I'd be happy to respond to any questions you may have.
All right, seeing no questions, thank you both very much. It was well argued on both sides. Thank you very much. The case is submitted.